All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is January 7th, 2026. And once again, our top story this morning is Venezuela. As we speak, things are happening. Where do we start? Breaking news just a few minutes ago, CNBC broke the story that sanctions on Venezuela are going to be selectively rolled back. Selectively. That's interesting. What do you think we mean by selectively? We don't know. They haven't clarified that. But if I might surmise just a little bit, it makes a lot of sense that you can go ahead and sell oil to anybody you want to as long as those people are on the list of people we tell you you're allowed to sell it to. In other words, not the Russians, not the Chinese, not the Iranians. Maybe the Chinese, there have been some things to suggest Trump will allow the oil to flow to China. But we're going to gatekeep that stuff. You better believe it. The story broke late last night that Venezuela, the word used was give, that they were going to give 30 to 50 million barrels of oil to the United States. President Trump posted on Truth Social that he is going to basically control the funds that are generated from that. I don't know that they're going to be used for the benefit of the American and the Venezuelan people, whatever that means. I have an idea. If the Venezuelans are actually going to give us 50 million barrels of oil out of the goodness of their heart, probably to buy the sanctions being rolled back, maybe we use that oil to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Anybody remember the SPR? Remember we talked a lot about that? Was it in 2022 when we dumped 180 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in order to lower oil prices? We never refilled it. Maybe since we suddenly are the proud owner of 50 million barrels of new oil, maybe we refill that for a rainy day. Oh, no. Well, why would we do something like that? That's irresponsible. Let's sell that stuff, and then we have more money that we can arbitrarily throw around in pet projects, whatever we want to do without getting any approval from Congress or anything like that. But I digress. So even as all of this is going on, you guys may notice there's a little bit of irony reflected in the headline this morning. They're talking about easing sanctions at the same time tankers are being seized. That sounds somewhat contradictory, doesn't it? Why, if you ease the sanctions, why seize the tankers? Again, selectively easing the sanctions. Those tankers are going to places or from places we don't like, and therefore we have selectively chosen to seize them. In particular, the one tanker that has been something of a thorn in the side of the U.S. Navy and Coast Guard for the last couple of days, the tanker Bella, which ran the blockade, we told them last week, hey, we're going to board you because we don't like you. And they're like, no, I don't want to be boarded. And they sailed away. And there's been, effort to get certain assets in place in order to seize a tanker, because seizing a boat that doesn't want to be seized can be difficult. Looks like they're finally seizing it. That tanker turned off its transponder, and when it turned it back on, it all of a sudden, instead of being the probably Maldives flagged, whatever, Bella, all of a sudden now it's the Russian tanker Marinera. Oh, now you're Russian and operating under a different name. That's interesting. And then the story breaks last night that the Russians were sending a submarine and other naval assets to escort the Marinera, which was being shadowed by a U.S. Coast Guard cutter of the same class, by the way, as the new frigate that the U.S. Navy is going to be building, modeled after that. And I guess the U.S. said, you know what, we're not going to wait for those Russian naval assets to arrive and have something of a Mexican standoff at sea. We're just going to go ahead and seize the tanker right now. That operation is ongoing as we speak. They're boarding the ship. So we've got sanctions are getting rolled back as we're boarding a ship. By the way, a second ship closer to Venezuela is also supposedly being boarded right now. We talked about how 16 tankers had just suddenly left Venezuela shortly after Maduro was seized, attempting to flee the blockade. Well, we're starting to track them down too. Things are up in the air. Things are moving, happening faster than we can report them, but that's what we have so far this morning. Now, on the other side of the world, we've got this whole other geopolitical CF going on this morning, the ongoing feud between China and Japan, because the Japanese prime minister said some words about Taiwan that really hurt the Chinese in the feels. And the Chinese are throwing a tantrum. And, you know, Japan, you know, when the kid is on the ground flailing and kicking and screaming, you're not supposed to validate the behavior, just ignore them. But the Japanese are having a trouble ignoring them because, well, they're hitting them in the economy and it hurts. The first one, dichlorosilane. That's a new one. Keep in mind, just yesterday they were talking about export controls on rare earths to Japan or anything that might help the Japanese military, which is pretty much anything at all. Well, today the Chinese have announced they're doing a dumping investigation against the Japanese for dichlorosilane. What is dichlorosilane? I don't know. It took a lot of effort this morning just to figure out how to pronounce it, and I'm pretty sure I still got it wrong. But that being said, dichlorosilane is used in the manufacture of semiconductors, and Japan supplies a lot of the stuff to the Chinese. And now the Chinese are doing a dumping investigation, basically threatening tariffs or otherwise bans on Japanese dichlorosilane because they want to develop their own in-house industry. Of course, the Japanese say, hey, that's not cool. Don't do that. And even as all that is going on, China just arbitrarily and quite suddenly started unilaterally drilling for natural gas in the East China Sea. In particular, the area where they are drilling for gas is within disputed seas, waters that are claimed by both Japan and China as their own exclusive economic zones. In other words, the Chinese are taking gas that it's not really clear if it belongs to them. If you ask the Chinese, it all belongs to them. And I guess that criticism is somewhat ironic considering the whole Venezuelan oil story right now, but I digress. For the last 10 to 15 years, or pretty much since 2010, there has been a tacit agreement between Japan and China that the median point between the two countries was going to be used as the unofficial border between the exclusive economic zones. All right, both countries maintain their claims to these disputed waters publicly, but they've kind of used that line as a unofficial point of truce, or if you will. The Chinese crossed that and they started drilling for gas. Gas in an area that there is a legitimate claim by the Japanese that it's theirs. The Chinese are saying, no, we use our stupid nine dash line that says basically all the water belongs to us. This could very quickly spiral into the next big geopolitical crisis at sea. It's worth keeping an eye on. The negotiations over these disputed waters have been on pause, or you could say fell apart for the better part of a decade now. But you can see these little economic disputes flaring up over and over again, and the timing can't be ignored. It's all happening right after these comments by Sunai Takaichi that the Chinese threw a, some might say, childlike tantrum over. Also going on this morning, gold is making moves again, not in price. We're not talking about the big price move in metals this morning. Gold and silver are down a little bit here. They're due for something of a pullback. But gold is slowly replacing U.S. treasuries in the reserves of foreign governments. As a matter of fact, gold is about to overtake U.S. treasuries and may have actually already overtaken U.S. treasuries as the largest holding for foreign governments. That is very interesting. Why is that happening? Probably because the dollar is losing value. Probably a little bit because gold has run up so much in the last few years. It's not that they added so much to their reserves. It's that the existing reserves went up in value by so much. Although central bank buying of gold has continued for the last couple of years. But you can see the world is moving away from fiat and from IOUs and sovereign debt in bank reserves to gold. And, you know, if central banks are doing it, what's the rule? Like, don't fight the Fed and, you know, don't fight City Hall, all that stuff. If central banks are buying gold instead of treasuries, well, maybe I shouldn't be buying treasuries. Maybe I should be buying gold instead of treasuries too. Hey, I can't tell you what to do with your money, but the writing is on the wall here, guys. We've also got ADP private payrolls came out this morning. They were better than last month, although last month was pretty dreadful. They were better, but still not great, Bob. The U.S. did, though, have a positive private payrolls number from ADP. We'll talk about that and what sector was hiring. We've got Warner Brothers has dismissed Paramount's offer officially to buy them here in favor of Netflix's bid. We have seen that drama unfold over the last couple of weeks. We had a banger of a report from Hunter Brook Media yesterday. Shout out to Hunter Brook. I have this video. It's on my Twitter feed. If any of you guys follow me on Twitter, check out that video. It was put out yesterday. CVS, United Health, and Cigna, the three biggest health insurance companies in the world, have all set up PBM GPOs. What? That's a lot of letter salad. pharmacy benefits managers, group purchasing organizations. Now, what the hell is this all about? Well, a couple of years ago, there was this big hoopla about the pharmacy benefits managers, about how they were supposed to be negotiating on behalf of the buyer of the pharmaceuticals, right? You know, like the patient, that we pay them to negotiate better drug prices for us. The problem was all the money and rebates that the drug companies were paying them in order to get their drugs added to the formularies. All that money wasn't making its way back to the people they were supposed to be helping. It was making its way to United Health and Cigna and who's the other one? CVS's bottom line. They were just keeping all the money. And so all these pharmacy benefits managers came out and said, no, we've seen the error of our ways and we shall strive to return 100% of our rebates to the clients. And so what did they do? They set up these shell companies to act as middlemen who charge gigantic fees. Ah, not rebates, they're fees. It's totally different. And ultimately, the same money ends up flowing into the profit margins of the insurance companies instead of in the form of cheaper drug prices. Guys, healthcare is not health insurance. Understand that. There's this stupid misnomer going around in the press where we associate health insurance with health care. They are not the same thing. Health care is a doctor, nurse, or practitioner trying to help you feel better, treat some injury, disease, or make you healthier. Health insurance are the administrative bureaucratic assholes who are standing between you and your health care. We need to stop acting like giving more money to the insurance companies, either tax dollars or our money, is somehow going to improve our care. It doesn't. Insurance is the problem. Last but not least, we've got Twitter, or Grok, I should say, XAI, whatever you want to say, making non-consensual sexualized images of people, including minors, and X is not gonna fix it. They're not gonna make it so that their AI won't do that. They're just gonna say, well, if anybody does that, we'll ban them from Twitter. But they won't. That's fun. And Saudi Arabia is opening up their stock market and their real estate market to foreign investors. It's almost like they see the writing on the wall. They're losing market share in the oil business and they better come up with another plan real fast. And so they're trying to get some of that foreign money to flow into the kingdom. Guys, there is a lot happening in the world today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is just modestly negative, down by a single point, 0.02% in the red. We've got the Dow is green this morning, up 0.1%, or about 63 points to the upside. And the NASDAQ is in the red, off by 50 points, or 0.19%. Stocks not moving all that much in either direction this morning. The dollar is modestly weaker this morning, 98.55, off by 5 basis points. The dollar has had a good couple of days. It strengthened over the last few, so I'm not surprised to see a little bit of a pullback here this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are negative, suggesting bond prices going a little bit higher. A little bit of a safe haven trade going on this morning, emphasis a little bit. The 30-year yield is at 4.829. That's up almost 4 points. The 10-year is at 4.140%, up 4 basis points as well. The 2-year, 3.453. I'm sorry, I said up. That the yields are down by those 4 basis points. I do this all the time because of yields going down means prices going up. The inverse correlation throws me off. Dyslexia is a bitch. Let's move on. 2-year treasury, 3.453%. That yield is down by 2 basis points. And the 1 month, 3.604, down by a fraction of 1 point. Apologies for screwing up the direction of the move there. Looking over at the metals board and the commodities, we've got a lot of red this morning. Metals are taking a breather here. Spot gold, $4,448. That's off by $46, or 1% lower. February COMEX gold, $44.58, off by $36, almost $37, or 0.82% lower. Silver is moving lower bigly this morning. Although, you know, hey, we say bigly. Silver had another big move up yesterday that was relatively tame compared to some of the big moves it's made recently, but we did hit an intraday high of $82, almost $83. So we were very briefly back into the eight handles. Now we're selling off. Spot silver, $77.14, down by $4.12, 5% lower. March COMEX futures, 76.87, off by $4.16, 5% lower. Also, notice the backwardation again, 77.12 for your spot price. That is what, about 35 cents more expensive than March silver, when silver in the future is cheaper than silver right now. That is known as backwardation, indicative of shortages developing in London. So keep an eye on that one. But for now, the prices are moving lower after a monster run to over $82 yesterday. Either way, I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is down by a dime after making all-time highs yesterday. Platinum is off by $183, down 7.5%. Big move in the white metals this morning. Palladium along for the ride, down $132, or 7% lower. And crude oil is off by about 38 cents here, 56.75 for February WTI futures, down by about 0.2%. That being said, all the developments in the oil space over the last few days have had virtually no effect on the price of oil. That still sticks out at me. The market is saying we don't think this Venezuelan oil is gonna show up anytime soon. Taking a look at Bitcoin this morning, we are down sharply from yesterday's level, currently at 91,469. Over the last few days, we went as high as 94,000. We went over 94 very briefly yesterday, and then we started selling off. Been a little bit of volatility. It looks like Bitcoin is set to reverse and head lower here, currently down about $2,200. All right, let's talk about the big news this morning. This story from CNBC, let me just check something here. Okay, I'm going to refresh this just to see if they've updated the article, because this just broke right before I went live. Oil sales from Venezuela to continue indefinitely, and U.S. sanctions will be reduced, sources say. This story just breaking. Oil sales from Venezuela will continue indefinitely, and U.S. sanctions against Caracas will be selectively rolled back, sources close to the White House told CNBC's Brian Sullivan on Wednesday. President Trump said Tuesday that Venezuela will turn over 30 million to 50 million barrels of sanctioned oil, which will be sold at market prices. The money will be controlled by me. It's interesting there, by him personally, as president of the United States, to ensure that it's used to the benefit of the people of Venezuela and the United States, Trump said on a social media post. But those 50 million barrels are only the first tranche, and sales will continue indefinitely, the sources said. U.S. sanctions will be rolled back as part of the agreement. The sanctioned oil would have gone to China, but will be rerouted to the U.S. That just feels like a middle finger to the Chinese. Oh, well, why don't you drill for gas in our backyard if you're upset about it? So the Venezuelans are basically buying this sanction rollback with 50 million barrels of oil. That's about $2.5 million, if give or take. What are we going to do with it? The president says it will be managed by him personally for the benefit of the people of the U.S. and Venezuela. I'm saying just put the stuff in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, because we're probably going to need it one day. But hey, that's just what I would do with it. Trump said Tuesday that storage ships will transport the oil directly to unloading docks in the U.S. Venezuela, a founding member of OPEC, has the largest proven crude oil reserves, but it is only producing about 800,000 barrels per day, according to data from energy consulting firm Kepler. The U.S., by contrast, is currently producing 13.8 million barrels per day. Now, there you can see just how much the Venezuelan socialists have run their oil industry into the dirt. 800,000 barrels per day is the most they're able to produce from the world's largest reserves. They've got more oil than freaking Saudi Arabia, and they are not even producing a 15th of what the United States is capable of producing. That is how bad socialists are at running things. By the way, this was President Trump's announcement on Truth Social from this morning. He says, I'm pleased to announce that the interim authorities in Venezuela will be turning over between 30 and 50 million barrels of high-quality sanctioned oil to the United States of America. This oil will be sold at its market price, and that money will be controlled by me as president of the United States of America to ensure it is used to the benefit of the people of Venezuela and the U.S. So kind of suggesting that that oil will not be bound for the SPR, although that's just my opinion. That's what I think we should do with it. I've asked Energy Secretary Chris Wright to execute this plan immediately. It will be taken by storage ships and brought directly to unloading docks in the United States. Thank you for your attention to this matter, Donald J. Trump. That was President Trump on Truth Social. And we have this one from Walter Bloomberg this morning as well. Apparently, Energy Secretary Wright is currently speaking at this Goldman Sachs conference. And he says, U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright says U.S. government wants to sell Venezuelan oil and deposit money into U.S. controlled accounts, echoing what President Trump said. Now, guys, keep in mind here, Venezuela, a founding member of OPEC, the world's largest oil reserves. And it really looks, for all intents and purposes, that we now control who gets what from that country. All right, now, remember, don't worry, it was all about drugs and narco-terrorists, right? That was the pretext for everything we did. No, it was never about that. It was always about the oil. We can see it was always about the oil. But that's going on this morning. And, you know, even as we're like supposedly starting to play nice in the sandbox with the Venezuelans, it's questionable how long that'll last. We've got this drama unfolding at sea. Ship closes in on Russia-flagged tanker pursued by U.S. forces. Now, this article was from last night, and this is that rusty old hulk of a tanker. Now, what's interesting here is they're saying previously the Bella One, now renamed the Marinera, has been chased by the U.S. Coast Guard through the Caribbean and into the Atlantic. All right, this is the tanker that evaded the blockade last week, and they ran. They turned off their transponder. They were previously the Bella. Now they are the Russian-flagged Marinera. We're seeing all of these boats fleeing Venezuela with their transponders turned off. They're coming back on as Russian and Chinese vessels, tacitly acknowledging that the sanctions violations were the Russians and Chinese all along. A vessel bearing the hallmarks of U.S. forces appearing to be closing in on a Venezuela-linked Russia-flagged ship pursued since Washington began a full oil blockade last month, according to satellite images and maritime experts. The U.S. sanctioned oil tanker, previously the Bella One, now renamed the Marinera, has been chased by the U.S. Coast Guard through the Caribbean Sea into the Atlantic. It has changed its flag to Russia during that time, a move likely intended to seek protection. Now, this is interesting because CBS reported this week that American forces plan to intercept the vessel, and the Wall Street Journal has since reported that Moscow had responded by dispatching a submarine and other unspecified naval-esque assets to escort the Marinera. So there was a Russian sub and some other Russian vessels on its way. This is now in waters between Iceland and Ireland is where this ship is. It fled all the way from Venezuela. And then we've got this one breaking this morning. U.S. is seizing the Venezuela-linked Russian-flagged oil tanker after a weeks-long pursuit. It looks like this operation is currently underway. The United States is attempting to seize a Russian-flagged oil tanker with links to Venezuela after more than a two-week-long pursuit across the Atlantic. And as a Russian submarine and warship were close by, two U.S. officials told Reuters on Wednesday, the seizure, which could stoke tensions with Russia, you think, came after the tanker, originally known as the Bella One, slipped through a U.S. maritime blockade of sanctioned tankers and rebuffed U.S. Coast Guard efforts to board it. The officials, who were speaking on condition of anonymity, said the operation was being carried out by the Coast Guard and the U.S. military. This appeared to be the first time in recent memory that the U.S. military has attempted to seize a Russian-flagged vessel. They added the Russian military vessels were in the general vicinity of the operation, including a Russian sub. It was unclear how close the vessels were to the operation, which was taking place close to Iceland. The U.S. Coast Guard first attempted to intercept the vessel last month, but it refused to be boarded. Since then, it has registered under a Russian flag. Now, it's also important to mention that there's also another ship that is being boarded right now or being seized separately. The U.S. Coast Guard has also intercepted another Venezuelan-linked tanker in Latin American waters, U.S. officials told Reuters, as the U.S. continues enforcing a maritime blockade of sanctioned vessels from Venezuela. So a lot of developments in this story here. The oil is flowing. The tankers are being seized, which means the oil is only going to flow to the places we allow it to flow, which further suggests the U.S. has just taken over the Venezuelan oil industry, for better or worse. All right. Also going on this morning, the other thing that is going on, Tokyo lodges protests with Beijing over gas field in the East China Sea. This one broke. Well, this one was a couple of months ago. Apparently, Japan had lodged a protest with China after discovering what it says are efforts by Beijing to develop gas fields in disputed waters of the East China Sea. The foreign ministry said late Monday it had confirmed that Beijing was setting up drilling rigs in the area where two countries' exclusive economic zones overlap, and submitted the complaint to the Chinese embassy. It looks like this story is older than I realized this morning, guys. I'm sorry about that. But this is apparently this news broke in August. I didn't catch that when I was doing my prep here. But it does go to show you that these territorial disputes, everything going on between the Chinese and the Filipinos, the Chinese and the Vietnamese, the Chinese and the Taiwanese, the Chinese and the Japanese, the Taiwanese, the Chinese and the South Koreans, they've pretty much got a territorial water dispute with everybody anywhere near the territorial waters. See also the nine dash line. However, one story that is definitely not from August that is breaking this morning: China escalates feud with Japan and probes chip making material. This one just broke about 4 a.m. Eastern time this morning. China started an anti-dumping probe into a key chip making material from Japan, escalating the dispute between Asia's largest economy shortly after Tokyo officials rebuked Beijing over potentially wide-ranging export controls. The material, dichlorosilane, is mainly used in thin films needed to produce logic, memory, analog, and other types of chips, according to China's Ministry of Commerce. The investigation should be completed within a year from Wednesday, but may extend an additional 6 months, it said. The move marks the latest escalation in a dispute over comments on Taiwan by Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takeuchi in early November. A day earlier, Beijing announced export controls on items destined for Japan that could have military uses. Concerned over potential impacts to Japan's key industries have bought down automaker shares while boosting rare earth-related stocks, though how China will actually implement its controls remains unclear. Japan is the global leader in ultra-high-purity dichlorosilane, which is used to process silicon wafers and semiconductors. China has sought to expand upstream in the chip supply chain, nurturing research and development of materials and tools that are building blocks of semiconductor manufacturing. So yesterday, it was rare earths that were blocked from being exported to Japan. Now China is threatening, they haven't actually done it, they're just threatening, launching this dumping investigation into the imports from Japan of dichlorosilane, which I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that one right. Let me know in the comments if I'm getting that one wrong, this material that's used to make chips. The Chinese are really upset about those comments about that Sanae Takeuchi made about Taiwan. And well, just want to take this opportunity to say welcome and good morning. Special shout out to all my favorite little G-bots, you adorable little Pooh Bears in the comments who every time I talk about China show up with China a number one mighty dragon and all that other crap. Thank you for the engagement. See you guys tomorrow. Also going on this morning, we've got gold is muscling out treasuries as foreign reserve asset. We've been seeing central banks buying gold for quite a while here, guys. And now there is more gold, or almost more gold, sitting in the reserves of central banks than there is U.S. treasuries. Gold is neck and neck with treasuries to become the biggest reserve asset for foreign governments, driven by a year of explosive price gains and aggressive central bank buying. Official holdings of gold abroad total more than 900 million troy ounces, according to data posted by the World Gold Council this month. The numbers, sourced from the International Monetary Fund, refer to the end of November for most countries, though some figures are as of October, which gold is a lot higher since then, so it's probably made the pass ever since. Based on gold's value on November 30th, that translates to $3.82 trillion worth of gold. That compares with almost $3.88 trillion worth of long and short-term treasuries foreign governments held as of October. Nobody trusts anyone's fiat currency. Hence the rise in the appeal of gold and other metals, wrote Joe Kalish, chief macro strategist at NDR, in a research note on Monday. Other countries' reserves of gold are on course to exceed the value of their treasury holdings, according to Kalish. When I first started talking about this 3 months ago, the difference was pretty stark, he wrote in Barron's. Today, not so much, based on estimates and current pricing. Using year-end prices and assuming foreign central bankers haven't reduced their stocks of gold, foreign central banks ended 2025 holding an estimated $3.93 trillion worth of gold in their reserves. That would put gold reserves ahead of the holdings of U.S. treasuries. Still, the run-up in gold's position means there has been a reduction in exposure to the U.S. financial system, be it due to the decline in the value of the dollar or to escape the risk that assets could be seized or sanctioned by the Donald Trump administration. And I can't help but take issue with that last sentence there. All right, look, President Trump has done plenty to criticize him about. All right, you want to criticize the meme coins, the conflicts of interest, the unilateral seizure of a foreign leader. There's no shortage of things to take issue with the president. Perfectly legitimate gripes. I have many of those myself. That being said, we don't need to make this crap up. When they're talking about that maybe people are buying gold instead of U.S. treasuries to escape the risk that the assets could be seized by the Donald Trump administration. Come on, guys. Come on, Barons. It wasn't the Donald Trump administration that seized the Russian assets that largely many speculate is behind this float of gold. That was the last guy. Remember the sharp as attack, extremely coherent, his best self. Even I have struggled keeping up with him. Joe Biden. That was the guy who seized the foreign reserves of U.S. treasuries. It was not the Donald Trump administration. There's plenty of reasons to be critical of Trump without revisionist history. All right. Got to call BS on Barron's for that one. All that being said, it's not out of the question that Trump would repeat that. It's just he hasn't done that. And the other thing, the run-up in gold's position means there's a reduction in exposure to the U.S. financial system. That is actually very factual. More and more people every day are realizing that the only way the U.S. government can continue to operate in its current extremely reckless fiscal state is by making sure that the value of our debt is losing value faster then the interest is accumulating. In other words, negative real yields on U.S. treasuries, which means if you hold U.S. treasuries, you're losing spending power. And what is the safe haven alternative to U.S. treasuries? It's gold and by extension, silver. And yeah, that's absolutely accurate here. The run-up in gold's position means there is a reduction in exposure to the U.S. financial system, even though the second half of the sentence is total horse manure. All right, let's shift gears a little bit to the employment story, U.S. ADP employment change. And remember, guys, on Friday, we get the all-important non-farm payrolls. For now, we got private sector employment in the U.S. increased by 41,000 jobs in December of 2025 after a revised 29,000 loss in November. That's an upwardly revised number from November. It was previously reported that we lost 32,000 jobs, now 29. So we're looking at a net gain of 44,000. Although still, that is slightly less than forecast for a 47,000 gain. We've got a better number, but not a great number. It's still not that good and less than we were expecting. December brought a rebound in hiring led by education and health services and leisure and hospitality. Small establishments recovered from November job losses with positive end-of-year hiring, even as large employers pulled back, said Dr. Nella Richardson, chief economist at ADP. That's a pretty interesting talking point right there, that the hiring, the job gains was in small companies. The big corporations were laying people off in November and December because they're just dreadful, awful people. We'll get to why in just a minute here. But small mom and pops are hiring. That's pretty interesting, although not at a rate that's going to change the unemployment picture. Let's go through this one pretty quick. Warner Brothers dismisses latest Paramount bid as inadequate. We already know why they've been doing this. There's doubts about whether Paramount could pay for it because it was largely a debt-fueled acquisition. Warner Brothers would rather sell to Netflix. We still don't know what the regulators are going to say about this merger, but for now, it looks like Paramount is back of the line. Also, we got to go kind of fast here, guys, because we're running a little overtime. I cannot emphasize enough that you should go to my Twitter feed at JG_Nuke for you guys watching on YouTube and check out that video that Hunter Brook Media posted yesterday. CVS, United Health, and Cigna accused of diverting billions via shell firms. We do not hate these companies enough. What they've done, they have promised that they're going to start returning all of these rebates to the customers in order to save them money on prescription drugs, which is what we pay them to do. Instead, they created this entirely new secret category of expenses using shell companies in other countries. They're calling them group purchasing organizations. They're all subsidiaries of the same three companies. And instead, all the rebate money is being called fees and it's being routed to these companies, which have more profits per employee than freaking Apple and NVIDIA. On a per employee basis, these are some of the most profitable companies in the world. You just don't hate these companies enough. Check out that video. Outstanding work by Hunter Brook Media on this one. Also going on this morning, Musk's Grok AI generated thousands of undressed images per hour on X. Oh, AI. Yeah, it's going to cure cancer. It's going to solve physics. We're going to build data centers in space. But first, non-consensual sexualized images, including those of minors. Okay, that's what we're getting from these tech CEOs. Elon Musk X has become a top site for images of people that have been non-consensually undressed by AI, according to a third-party analysis, with thousands of instances each hour over a day earlier this week. Since late December, X users have increasingly prompted Grok, the AI chatbot tied to the social network, to alter pictures of people, posts of themselves. During a 24-hour analysis of images of a Grok account posted to X, the chatbot generated about 6,700 every hour that were identified as sexually suggestive or nudifying, according to Genevieve O, a social media and deepfake researcher. The other top five websites for such content averaged 79 new AI undressing images per 24 hour, as if that's somehow better. I mean, it's not as many. Yes, it's better, but still, I thought zero was the number we're supposed to do. The scale of deepfakes on X is unprecedented, said Carrie Goldberg, a lawyer specializing in online sex crimes. We've never had a technology that's made it so easy to generate new images because Grok is free and linked to a built-in distribution system. X did not respond to a request for comment. Rather than preventing the chatbot from creating the content in the first place, Musk has spoken about punishing the users who ask it to. Anyone using Grok to make illegal content will suffer the same consequences as if they upload illegal content, Musk said in a reply to a post account. Why don't you just fix it? Why don't you just fix it so that Grok can't do that? I don't understand why they won't do that. Maybe they can't do that. Maybe because these things aren't nearly as smart as they claim they are. And if you put simple restrictions like don't create nudifying images of children, the whole freaking thing falls apart. Or maybe they just won't do it. Maybe they just don't want to be bothered. But that's going on this morning as well. And the last two guys, something interesting, and I can't help but wonder if these stories might be related to the developments in Venezuela. Saudis open stocks to all foreign investors to boost inflows. That is this morning, and it comes just as we get this one at midnight tonight. Saudi Arabia opens the property market as MBS courts overseas investors. Saudi Arabia seems very eager to attract offshore investment, investments that they had previously not allowed into the country. I can't help but wonder, is this Saudi Arabia trying to pivot to something, anything that isn't oil, because they're about to lose a huge swath of market share over the next few years, not just to U.S. domestic production, but also to Venezuelan oil coming back online and basically being controlled by us. And if you're the head of the biggest price-controlling cartel in human history, it's hard to control prices when two of the largest producers in the world don't want to play ball. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Gordon Guano. What's going on, Gorno? He says, Iron Matey, letters of marquee and reprisal to make a comeback soon. I can't help but notice if that R matey is a indicative of pirate behavior, perhaps, tapping into my nautical roots there. Yeah, look, seizing boats at sea. There is a term for that. It is piracy, but I guess when you do it in a uniform, it's not piracy. It's enforcing sanctions in the global world order and whatever, I don't know, legally speak we want to use to justify it. But yeah, we're seizing the boats. They're Russian boats. Look, I don't shed any tears for the Russians. I don't really care that the Russians are losing their boat. I just hope nobody gets hurt. That's all. Thank you very much, Gordon Guano, for supporting the channel. The Comic Child says, any thoughts on Greenland, Denmark, and the USA on your 2026 bingo card? Little worried about the unwinding of the yen carry trade as well. Look, the Greenland story, I think, has always just been a case of President Trump can't keep his mouth shut. And I mean, look, when President Trump says things, the world tends to immediately dismiss it as just Donald Trump saying things. Unless it's something we really don't like that Donald Trump said, then the world says, oh my God, Donald Trump said something and we need to take him at his word. So one day he's a liar. Everything he says is bullshit. The next day, oh my God, he's definitely going to do it. I don't get all that excited about Greenland. We're not going to go invade Greenland, guns blazing, shooting at the Dutch, the Danes who control it. That being said, we'll probably bully them out one way or another. I mean, look, coming fresh off of seizing a guy in the middle of the night, President Trump is like that guy in the prison yard who just beat up the biggest, meanest guy in the yard. Maduro wasn't the biggest, meanest guy in the yard, but I digress. And now he's trying to bully other people around. He's trying to get his way. He's trying to use that to be new leverage in Greenland, which he's always wanted. And he's joked about making Canada the 51st state. That's not going to happen. That being said, why wouldn't we just negotiate with the Danes for a Navy base or a missile base in Greenland if that's really what we want Greenland for? And look, Greenland seems like it's like really far from Russia and China, but if you look at a globe from the North Pole down, you actually realize just how strategically vital Greenland is, especially if you consider the track that intercontinental ballistic missiles might take. Having assets in Greenland could be huge for missile defense, not to mention, you know, naval reach. That being said, why wouldn't we just negotiate with our allies, the Danes, to put these assets there? Why wouldn't we just cut a deal to do that? I'm sure they would allow us. They're our NATO allies. It's arguably because we want the territory, because we want what's underneath it. It's about rare earths. It's about mineral rights. I think that's really what's going on with Greenland and Denmark. We're using national security when we can solve the national security issues without seizing the subcontinent. A little worried about the unwinding of the yen carry trade. Me too. I'm also watching that. The Japanese 10-year hit another all-time high yesterday. It's down a little bit this morning, but watch those rising borrowing costs in Japan. Absolutely cause for concern. Although right now the yen is still weakening. So in order for the yen carry trade to unwind, most consider a sudden abrupt strengthening of the yen to be a necessity for that carry trade to unwind. That's not happening, although the borrowing cost is eating away at the arbitrage opportunity of the yen carry trade. Thank you very much, The Comic Child, for supporting the channel. And Steve Woitis, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says mainstream media has lost many viewers to independents like nobody special finance. Is it possible that we will see Hollywood lose audiences to independent filmmakers? I don't know. I mean, Hollywood may suddenly one day decide to start making good movies again. In the meantime, we could always just do reboots and remakes of the same old crap, you know, borrow on the success of the people who came before us, and in some cases, sprinkle our own stupid ideology on top of it, thus ruining the story, but stunning and brave. look, Hollywood may one day decide to make good movies again. It is not this day. In the meantime, Hollywood's pretty much the only game in town when it comes to films. Yeah, there are independent studios. Are those movies as good as the movies we used to get back in the day? No, not even close. But I can tell you the movie industry is suffering here. Streaming is eating into them. The theater going experience is virtually dead in the United States now. And I think the lack of quality coming out of Hollywood is a major factor in that. So thank you for the kind words about the media losing viewers to independents. I agree. You know, as I was watching that Hunter Brook Media video yesterday about the pharmacy benefits managers, again, I highly recommend that. I couldn't help but wonder, where the hell are the real journalists in the world who are supposed to be doing this? I mean, Hunter Brook Media, they're attached. I don't know if they're a short-selling firm. I think they occasionally trade around what they do. But that's the work that the traditional news media used to do, and they don't anymore. Maybe because they have a lot of the same financial interests as the subject of the investigation of Hunter Brook Media. Either way, I highly recommend you check that one out. And thank you very much, Steve, for supporting the channel. Armando Reyes, what's going on, sir? He says, serious question here. We have hit Iran. WW have hit Iran. We supplied Ukraine. We aided the new government in Syria and now Venezuela. When will Russia and China have enough? Okay, yeah, we did hit Iran. We did supply Ukraine. We did aid the new government in Syria, which, by the way, is worth pointing out, is run by a guy who used to be Al-Qaeda. I mean, that didn't get very much play. Like he used to like hold up severed heads and chant that to America, but now he's our friend. All right. It's good to make friends, I guess. Better than having enemies. Is he really our friend though? I don't know. When will Russia and China have enough? I don't care, to be honest with you, if Russia and China have enough. Like for all the faults of the United States, and I'm not gonna sit here and defend US intervention overseas and US foreign policy. Are we a bully on the world stage? Yup. You better believe we are. Do we throw our weight around? Yup. Do we do it when it's not entirely necessary? Yup. That being said, what the hell do you think Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping would do if they had the same capabilities we did? Do you think they would debate it in the media? And do you think we would hear, here's the pros and here's the cons? And do you think the moral gray area and the ethical dilemma where there's not really a right answer, there's only a choice between two hard and wrong decisions, do you think any of that would be had out? Or would they just blast some freaking propaganda and go do whatever the hell they wanted to with no regard for the body count that they leave behind. So when will Russia and China have enough? Official answer, I don't give a shit. That's my answer for that one. Anyways, thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Appreciate that very much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Shout out to all you G-Bots. Thank you for the engagement. Oh, thank you also, guys, for supporting the channel on Patreon. Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody else, till next time, live small and dream big.